Welcome to the Lesbo and the Bean universe. Lesbo and the Bean. LATB. Lat B. Where mixed martial arts and the UFC get silly. Big silly. Buckle up and move your tray tables to their upright position. And please, somebody shut that baby up. It's time for Lesbo and the Bean.
This episode of Lesbo and the Bean is brought to you by Lather & Co. That's latheringcompany.com for all your bath and body needs.
This is an exclusive for Lesbo and the Bean. Remember to type in LATB, L-A-T-B, 15 for 15% off. Any purchases over $25 will give you free shipping. U.S. domestic for now. Wait till later.
That's a really good deal for Lesbo and the Bean. So once again, that's latheringcompany.com. for all your organic, cruelty-free bath and body needs, and onto the show.
Welcome back, episode 188. Man, did shit hit the fan as soon as we dropped our last podcast. I mean, I feel like I opened up that MMA Twitterverse, and Conor McGregor breaking into a young man's car and stealing his phone and smashing it. It's been all over the news. He has been released officially. Florida man breaks through window, smashes cell phone, and gets arrested with a felony. How do you feel about that, Lesbo?
He didn't break through a window.
Oh, I initially had been hearing he broke through a car
Maybe
door
that was the
or
first
a car window.
Thing. But didn't he just, some guy walked up to him and
he grabbed
went
his
to
phone.
Shake his hand. And the grabbed guy reached phone? Out his hand like they were going to shake hands, and Connor kind of pulled him in, grabbed his phone, threw it on the ground, smashed it, and stepped on it, and his bodyguard stepped around him, and then he walked away, I guess.
And then the guy walked up behind him and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And Connor laughed and got in his car and drove away, is essentially what I heard as well. I mean, this is still hot off the press. He got out of jail and has been running around Florida, burning off a little of that extra energy if you haven't seen all the other stuff. But is this a case of same that happened to Ronda? No, I like to bring my girl up here. And when you get what you wish for and you become the most famous person, but that means you don't get privacy. Your side chick, D knows about her. Your side chick, whoever you didn't want that picture taken up with, that's how famous you got. You got to be careful what you wish for. And I feel like Connor's getting all of the attention. And now he's like, all right, give me a break, guys. You don't get a break when you're that famous.
Yeah, he is getting next level famous. And he's hanging out in Miami for some purpose. We don't really know yet or who he's training with. Is there any inside gossip on that? That's what I'd rather hear about. I want to know why he's there as a...
I've heard he's been bouncing around gyms in Florida. He hasn't really stuck to one more than the other, but he's just kind of getting training all around Florida. The interesting thing to me, though, is SBG. The ties that Connor had with SBG and how SBG all came up. Who's at SBG anymore? Calderwood's in TriStar. Gunny's in Canada as well. Maybe TriStar or something else. Dylan, he ain't in SBG. Lobov isn't there either. I don't know where he's at. And Connor's in Florida bouncing around. But who's there? Wood? Is it Nathaniel Wood?
Maybe,
that might be the only one.
Part of it is SBG, I imagine, running through its heyday and super popular and maybe expanding to a point where he used to provide privatized care to these fighters, and now he has a bigger gym for himself. And not that it makes bad training at all, it's just once I think the fighters get to a certain level, they can't train with the public.
I totally agree with that. Tanya Evinger will tell you exactly that, why she fired all of her coaches in her last day. You remember that injury we talked about where a guy off of the street came in and her coach was like, yeah, train with her. And then he oblique kicked her leg into oblivion.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I do remember talking about it.
Exactly. So as you're saying, you can't train with the general public because there's Joe Billy Schmo who's like, I knocked out Conor McGregor once. I hit Houdini in the gut and killed him.
Yeah.
There's that asshole that wants to do that and claim that for the rest of their lives. What else has been in the dirt as far as the MMA verse?
What do you think about Connor? I don't think he should have a felony for crushing a phone in IMO.
Interesting, because it's a couple charges, right? Three or four? Criminal mischief as well?
if he just grabbed somebody's phone out of their hand and crushed it, in my opinion, come on, everyone. Like, what kind of
I agree. Felony is probably a little rough. I don't know what, once it gets to a certain level, whether it becomes grand larceny, you know, once it hits a certain level of damage. How much is a cell phone worth? $1,000? $1,500 if you were a sucker?
iPhone 8, $450.
I don't think that statutes a felony, especially if Connor can be like, here's a $500, kid.
Whatever. And he's saying now, too, I thought he was going to kill me.
Of course. Of course. I was scared for my life, too. Me, too. Me and Rose. I mean, me and Kiesa and Rose all got, because I got PTSD watching that guy's recantment of it. Of course. I'm scared for my life. My ass. You're not scared for your life. Get out of here. That dude's huge as shit, too. Do you see him?
That is another danger. And apparently, it says Conor McGregor fan, Conor McGregor fan. He did not look like a Conor fan.
He was more of a Habib fan.
Yeah, that's what for it looked sure. Like IMO. IMO. Definitely.
The interesting thing, this has happened a few times, though, where UFC has a strict policy where no UFC fighter in their contract can get a fan in a rear naked choke for a photo, because Chuck Liddell and Matt Hughes both had a former cop come after them and say, look it, this guy choked me out till I was unconscious and came after him for millions, but only did enough people on the stand get up and finally talk about this guy's unsavory nature. But that had real world implications where people come at them like this. People do try to fabricate.
If he assaulted the dude or something, I just think we have to have a different rule with these phones. Like, these phones, it's like, it's kind of crazy.
Is it the phone, though, or is it, because it's still a broken law. I mean, you can't destroy someone else's property just because you feel like an asshole.
I agree. He should have to replace it.
So at least, 100%. At the very least.
And I think it's some kind of criminal charge. I don't think it's not...
A misdemeanor, though. It's a misdemeanor.
If you want to do pain and suffering, whatever you want to sue him in court for, that's different. I mean, what the law has to be involved in.
Sure.
Like, you shouldn't be slapping somebody's hand.
Sure.
Or slapping a phone. It's like he punched a phone or whatever and then crushed it or what. And the phone is worth money. So you should have to pay, I think, either the cost of equal or more. Or an equal or more replacement, and there should be no days in jail.
I mean, there wasn't. He was on what, a $1,200 bond or $2,000 bond? What was it? He was out within an hour.
Yeah.
It was just a mugshot. That was all they needed, really. I mean, that's already been on his t-shirt. I just saw a t-shirt with him on it.
I just think he should be treated like every other person would be treated with the same incident. This is what everyone keeps saying. Like, he should be treated like everyone else. He shouldn't get special treatment. Agreed. But he shouldn't be treated harsher either.
Totally agreed. Interesting, though, as you're saying, with all this preferential treatment, this is somebody who's already been sued multiple times in the United States, is on a visa, not an American citizen. Does this potentially have a little bit of back end where his visa could be? We've had other fighters not able to get back into the States because they had pending litigation. Our cousin, Ozdemir, actually couldn't fight for a little while at 205 because there was a Florida bar brawl that he wasn't a part of. He was a part of, but because of his work visa, it did limit the amount of work he could do in the States. So we have had precedent here. Do you feel like he's in any type of danger?
I was wondering, is he on parole from the bus attack?
At the very least, like, this is ongoing now, that it's litigation. There's ongoing case files. The government does pay attention to that.
Are you saying he's going to get the John Lennon?
I'm just saying we might see him back in Dublin soon enough. But...
Yeah, I know. They better get that wall up around Dublin.
Does he want to go back to Dublin, or is there charges he doesn't want to go back there for, from what we've heard of? As soon as he sets foot, do they handcuff him out there?
What's going on? Or is it a case of, like, can you get too big and then everybody wants them?
Mo money, mo problems, Notorious, B-I-G. You got
that,
what
Notorious?
You asked for. Hell yeah.
I thought that was P. Diddy and Mace.
They took that. He even clipped it out like he was on the golf course and Biggie's all
Biggie's on all Joey Diaz.
I know, I see it. It's in the Mace video. But it was Biggie who said it himself. So, interesting lappy conspiracy we start off with. But we got a 13-fight card to get to out of London. This one's going to be headlined by Darren Till versus Jorge Masvidal at 170 pounds. But you know how we like to do here at Lappy. We always start from the bottom to the top. It's a 13-card bout, and it's going to be a dirty one. There's so much options to make money, but whew, it's going to be hairy. I think we're going to be split up here for all the right reasons.
What is this again? I'm sorry, you just said it.
UFC ESPN number 5.
Do you know where we're out of?
London, and I couldn't tell you the venue off the top of my head.
Oh, yes, the London card. I know exactly what card it is now.
Do we know the venue? Does it matter? I want to say O2, but I could be wrong because they changed their freaking whatever. It could be the Tampax Stadium by the time we get there.
Tampax.
Nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it.
If it sucks, we'll take it away.
Before we get anything...
It is the O2 Arena.
In O2. I figured it's usually... They renamed them. I think there's an O2 in Australia as well is why I was hesitant with that one. Isn't it some sort of TV company or something like that over in Europe? Either TV or water company?
Oh my gosh. I would have no idea.
My bad. Putting you on the spot for no reason. But you know, here we start at 145 pounds with Nad Nirimani coming in with a 2-fight winning streak in the UFC against debuting Mike Grundy. 11-1 Grundy is fighting out of England, the 32-year-old debuting out of the Espen Fight League, ABC. He's also got a couple other European names in there. Tends to like to get it done in there with his wrestling. The 11-1 fighter actually has a lot of national English wrestling credentials and international experience. Saw him beating some Cameroonians and some other level or world level competition in there. Great single leg high crotch for this guy. Great double legs. Has that wrestling's work pace about him. The thing with Mike Grundy, though, is that his striking is definitely not evolved. He's a very wrestling-centric type of a fighter. You know, here at Lab B, we like to side with these guys. He's shown that he's got a good gas tank, and he has great guillotines and arm triangles, which is usually lines up hand-in-hand with wrestlers, is arm triangles and guillotines. It's a natural position that you usually go to in wrestling. So Grundy, that's where he really likes to excel out. Against Nad Nirimani, though, 2-fight veteran in the UFC, both of them being wins against Taha, which isn't in the UFC, I believe, anymore. And then as of late, getting a decision win over Andreas Dos Santos 3 months ago, but that was also a debut fighter. Nirimani, jack of all trades, master of none. Head movement is limited, but his wrestling is actually serviceable, and Nirimani likes to grind guys out as much as Grundy does. The thing that Nirimani may have a disadvantage in the basic 101 wrestling, Grundy will be able to beat him there, but Nad's got way better hands. By far better hands, better punch combinations, throws in better kicks. Not that his kicks are good, but Grundy is not going to throw a kick at all in there. If he does, it's like an inside straight kick that not good at all. And with Grundy, he really sets up the entire fight to go to the takedown and get you up against the cage, drag you down, and try to work those submissions. He'll throw an overhand right into double underhooks. He can get off of his back well. Nad, though, here, I feel like has okay enough takedown defense that it's going to probably get to the ground in the first or second round. But I feel like the further this fight gets in and the more tired that Grundy gets, especially this being his debut, I think Nad actually starts to pull away from this. And I know he's a humongous favorite at minus 245. I don't agree with that line at all. I think it is closer than that, but I do see Nad just having more avenues to win than Grundy. Grundy still has a live shot to get the decision, split decision win here. I'm going to stay away from this one. I think it's a low score. I think it's a decision either way. Give me Nurmani, the favorite. Who do you have in this one?
I agree. There's no reason for the first fight of the night to get crazy on a guy that is its first fight in the UFC against somebody who's at least well-worn enough in there to know exactly what to expect and then some. So I just think you stay with the favorite here. And even more importantly, I think this will be low scoring, so stay away from this fight.
8,900 for Nad against Mike Grundy, 7,300. There's almost no play at all there for Grundy. And Nad is, he's got to pretty much get a finish in the first round. And I think Grundy's tough enough to definitely stay alive in there. So he's going to be, again, as we're saying, a no play.
I agree. The line's a little off.
Yeah, right. But the line's off. It's not that big.
Always with the first fight of the night. It doesn't really pay off. It's like 50-50.
It is rare. It is rare on those ones, but they're down there for a reason. Another one that's all the way down there at 125 pounds is Priscilla Cachuera versus Molly Meatball McCann. This is some of the lowest level UFC fighting we're going to see in a long time.
How dare you?
I'm sorry, but this is Cachuera coming in, being a humongous underdog against Valentina Shevchenko, getting obliterated in there. But Cachuera being 8-1, her only loss being against Shevchenko. Don't let that throw you off and make you think that Cachuera is even okay and our girl Val's just that good. No, Cachuera is literally just not that good. She stands directly in front of you, throws punches from the hips, and this isn't the first round. This isn't when she gets tired where she just literally eats 2 and 3 punches against soccer moms and is able to out-hustle them because she wants it more. But as far as the actual technical fight skill, their scramble ability on the ground is next to none. She holds behind the head, waiting to get flung flu all the time, and just holds herself back on the ground. And striking-wise, there's a little bit of power, but I mean, she's just, again, knocking out soccer moms. Now, unfortunately, though, I wish I could say, hey, anyone with any type of a good game plan should be able to get in here and get it done. But Meatball McCann, if she showed us anything, the 7-2 fighter was also fighting soccer moms in the European scene. She was also fighting very low-level competition. And even though she was getting a lot of wins there and out-hustling people, it was more just her will winning than her actual technique. She was going in there. She goes in there, throws spinning back fists, spinning kicks that are very sloppy and leave her open where she will openly trip in these spins and only scramble to get up on top because her competition is that weak to not capitalize on the missed position. So I'm super low on both of these ladies. I don't think that it's really hard to pick a winner here because I'm so low on them, but I do think that Molly Meatball does shoot for a takedown much more constantly, and when she's on top, she does have way better ground and pound, but striking-wise, she is horrible as well, and Cachuera is more of the striker. I just see, though, McCann getting this down to the ground eventually and maybe submitting. I'm going to go with decision. I don't see Cachuera submitting. This is a clear stay away. I got Meatball winning submission round number 2. I'm not going to bet this heavy. I don't care what the line is. This is some of the lowest level, so it's a coin flip automatically just because at any given time, an ankle can break in this one and the winner gets the win. Who do you have in this fight? Why? It's a dirty one.
I have Meatball too. I feel like after whatever the bullet did to Priscilla, post-traumatic stress. That is post-traumatic stress. And I do feel at some point in this fight, Molly's going to end up on top of her and do a very similar thing. I'm hoping Molly took a good 9 months off for a reason because she realized she had to work on some things and tighten up her games in places. And she has a lot of steam behind her. She's the way local favorite. Everyone's really excited about her on the scene. I think she brings a big crowd. I almost want to think this is a setup to get the crowd hyped AF. They opened it with the two local guys, so then they have Meatball in there. I think she's going to come in with heavy, good hands, and this is a setup fight to somebody that doesn't have good head movement that's going to get caught. And Bullet is crisp, and Bullet is awesome, and there is nowhere that she lacks. And the only thing I would say that she lacks in a little bit, maybe, is she's not the power of Amanda Nunes, and that's what Priscilla made the Bullet look like. I think Meatball has heavy hands like that. So give me Meatball. Stoppage, ref stoppage in the round 2.
Whoa, So we got both here. Round number two stoppage, because I'm saying submission round number two as well. Just to be a bit of devil's advocate, we are in the UK. We are away from USADA. You know that Cachuera didn't make weight for her debut fight. She looked all sorts of thick in there. She actually had about 4 or 5 weeks to get ready. Do you think that, you know, there might be a little bit of extra Asahi juice in the bloodstream for this one?
Is that why they call her Meatball?
No, that's not Meatball. I'm talking about Cachuera from Brazil. Meatball too? Who knows what they put in their meatballs over in London?
Yeah, I don't know what the London rules are at all. I have no idea.
I know USADA ain't over there. That's a United States commission.
And isn't London that weird? Like, it's like a district where it's like DC, Washington, D.C., where it isn't like a city-state or something?
It is. It's got an individual, unique thing. I'm sure we have some fans that would be able to break this down.
We
got
some you dopes. I'll look it up while you go.
It's a province, silly.
I don't know if I'm going to go heavy on Meatball, but I might. How much is she before?
8,500 on DraftKings against 7,700 minus 200 favorite Molly Meatball against plus 160 Cachuera. If there's a play, it is Meatball as well. I don't see Cachuera anywhere. So maybe I have like 20-30% Meatball, but I don't think either of these ladies win many fights going on after this. This is, again, scraping the bottom of the barrel in my eyes. At 145 pounds, we have two returning fighters with Dan Ige versus Dan Henry. You've been listening here for a while. You know the Bean's got a crush on Henry himself. That whiskey runs deep. The Hatchet himself is coming in with a 12-2 record, demolishing Hakeem Duwadu in his debut, or not his debut, Tamura initially in his debut, and then beating Duwadu in a submission 11 months ago. Duwadu had all sorts of hype. There were some holes in this game, and Henry, even though his debut went to a decision with Tamur, the lesser Tamur, that was also like 2 weeks notice, and he had a really hard weight cut. That's also why I played him against Hakeem, because he had a full training camp, and I think Henry has shown he's got a great gas tank, serviceable everywhere, power in his hands, and he has those type of hips that underneath him people turn awkwardly. They feel his power on the ground and they don't like what they feel. I don't know if I'm making that up. It's just kind of the tape I see. I'm like, ooh, people kind of wilt under him. And that usually means that he feels a lot heavier than he really is. Against Dan Ige, though, the 10-2 fighter is coming off with a loss in his debut against Julio Arce a year ago, but rattled off two wins against Mike Santiago, no longer in the UFC, and Jordan Griffin, a decision 2 months ago. Ige likes to strike from his hips, throws a lot of weight into his punches because I feel like he's one of these jiu-jitsu guys that relies on his jiu-jitsu so much that he can get loose with his striking, because if it goes to the ground, ideally, that's where he wants to be anyways. His takedowns are okay. He really likes to go for a single, but they're fairly telegraphed, and I think Henry actually has good enough hips to be able to defend those. So I feel like this fight, on the feet, Henry's a bit crisper, has a potentially a little bit better of a gas tank here as well. And Ige's real only shot here for me is on the ground. And I think that Henry can actually stifle a lot of these jiu-jitsu transitions and win the decision just by staying position over submission. Ige's crafty though. He does throw really good butterfly hooks in there. Throws a lot of knee and ankle sweeps in there too. So Henry's got to be really careful, but if Henry just chooses to use that wrestling in reverse and keep it striking, I think he runs away with this. And this is a coin flip of a fight, near even, minus 115, or minus 145 for Dan Ige, the favorite, against the plus 115. Henry, I'm going with the underdog. You should already know that. Who do you got, Lesbo, in this one?
Oh,
it's going to be
gosh. Such
a fun one. Profile fight in my eyes.
I agree. It's funny. You have the underdog, but on Tapology, the favorite.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is crazy, because I have Dan Ige. I just think he looks crisp. He looks good in there every time I see him. I still like Danny Henry. The caliber of fighters that he's gone against just aren't even close to Dan Ige. And I like everything I've seen from him so far. I think he's going to eke out a decision, and I do too think it's going to be a great fight.
So on DraftKings, 8,200 for Dan Ige, the favorite, against 8,000 for the plus 115 underdog. Henry, super close. I'm just thinking,
could it be a slow, boring fight?
It could turn into a decision. I have Henry decision, actually, because I feel like it just turns into position over submission. But I feel like Henry can emulate that Arce game plan. Not that Ige is the same fighter as when he was Arce. He has a lot of time to grow. But again, this is a fun, fun fight. We got it split up on here, rightfully so. Interesting one. When we get to fight night, we got to watch weigh-ins, see how these guys look, see what the travel was.
Yeah, and the line could change by then as it's already changed. It's a close fight.
It's a close fight.
In my mind, it could change. This one, watch weigh-ins. I think everything is going to... Everything always matters, but some fights are a lot closer than others. And is that fight I could go back and forth on.
I feel like we got a couple more on the way that are that close. One of them being at 185 pounds, we have...
This is a nice card.
Oh, yeah.
This is a real nice card, UFC.
It's deep. This card is deep. And this is one of those deep fights with Tom Breeze coming in against Ian Heinisch, 185ers middleweight. We got Heinisch with a 12-1 record coming off of a four-fight winning streak. He won his debut on the Contender Series and beat his 5 months ago, Cesar Montanch Ferreira, one of the sneaky underdogs, one of the best wrestlers in the 185-pound division all time, Ferreira. A lot of people saw Ferreira being a big favorite there. I did as well. We all had him winning. Heinisch uses wrestling in reverse to keep it striking and picked apart in a decision. Ferreira, who I think could be one of those barely outside top 15ers, is Ferreira as good as he is. I think he's sneaky in there, and Heinisch really surprised in that fight. Tom Breeze, though, being 11-1, having multiple fights in the UFC over 3 years ago, being Kenta Nakamura. 2 years ago, he lost to Sean Strickland. 9 months ago, he beat Dan Kelly, but that's a faded Dan Kelly. I am going to boast a little bit here, but in the five fights Tom Breeze has had in the UFC, I have picked him right all five times. Picked the Strickland upset as well. So I feel like I got a fairly good read on Tom Breeze, and he is a great striker with good takedown defense, but he is exploitable on the ground for sure, for sure. I mean, he has had advantageous matchups, though, with a faded Dan Kelly in there. And even in that Strickland, the reason I had Strickland winning that fight is because Strickland was going to be able to not get oversized as much by him and use that wrestling to really take away and neutralize all of that striking for Breeze, because he is so tall and long that once you get those double underhooks on him, he really has no option and gets tripped up. His knees get tripped up a lot. He gets taken to the ground, and he just doesn't have a really flashy or dangerous guard game or off of his back. He's not really going to submit you as much. He really essentially is a striker. And Heinisch is tailor-made, in my eyes, to get another win just like Strickland. I think Heinisch is one of these guys who's got serviceable striking. Jack of all trades, I've said it a few times, master none, that's Heinisch, good chin. But he likes to grind, likes to get those underhooks, push up against the fence, use that wrestling. Not going to get submitted by the best of them. Striking-wise, he can get picked apart by Breeze, but if Heinisch even made it close against Ferreira, I think Ferreira would be able to also take apart Breeze. So I know it's a bit of MMA mathy, but I do think that after the first round, Breeze starts to gas enough and Heinisch probably keeps on going. I have 2-1 rounds, if not 30-27 decision for the slight underdog. Give me Heinisch in the grind. I could see myself switching. If there's a knockout, I think it's more than likely Breeze, but I see it's more than likely like a 60-70% chance Heinisch gets the decision, 30% chance Breeze gets the finish. Who do you have in this fight, and why?
I, too, have been right about Tom Breeze 5 times out of 5.
Boo, boo, boo!
And I think he's going to lose this fight as well.
Booyakasha!
I thought Cesar Ferreira was a better fighter against Heinisch, and he really proved himself to me. And I think in a lot of the same ways, he can beat Tom Breeze. Tom Breeze could be chinny now. He's so young. But now I'm looking at all the odds on the entire card, and I'm thinking, oh, a lot of the betting sites are out of the UK. No wonder they're so heavily weighed toward the UK fighters, because it's coming in heavy with all their local guys. So, or and maybe the pickers live there, the people who are picking the odds. So, I think Heinisch is going to have the way better cardio and just eke it out in the grind. I think his wrestling's that much better, so he could have just worked on his striking in between time. He has nasty elbows from the inside, and I think those can catch breeze with a combination of just takedown and fighting off takedown. Heinisch is going to be in your face the entire time. I think Tom Breeze is going to feel like he's underwater after a while, and it's going to be a decision that can't be swayed even by the judges if one guy's on his back most of the time. So at least two rounds I could give to Heinisch. Heinisch decision. I like the underdog on that, too.
That is awesome. I feel like we're saying a lot of the same thing here. Tom Breeze, 8,400 on DraftKings against 7,800 for Heinisch. The thing is, with that, I feel like you could play, this line is so close that you could play either fighter, because as I'm saying, if Tom Breeze gets the win, it's more than likely a finish early in there. As this fight goes on, it's more Heinisch, but with the amount of takedowns and passes and ground and pound he lays, he can also score a lot over those three rounds. So I think it's either one. I don't think you stack these guys, but I'm going to probably expose myself a little bit more to that 7,800 for Heinisch. Do you see a lot of other people playing that role? Do you think it's going to be contrarian on DraftKings? Because I feel like in this type of night,
I think everyone's going to come in heavy on Breeze, and Heinisch might be a good little sneaky, dirty pick. He might be a good little one.
It definitely could be.
His name's not big enough for people to get high on him.
Yeah, he's only... But, I mean, I agree with that. And only hardcores know how good Ferreira it really is.
And just that wrestler grind mentality.
100%.
And from the submission loss to where he was, if he didn't get submitted by Cesar Ferreira, he's good. You're not going to worry about him having to get submitted by Tom Breeze. So if it's just a hand game, I don't think Ian's going to even let it get there. I think he's going to get in the inside, even if he has to take a punch or two. And I think he can lay some nasty shots of his own when he gets there. So
definitely like what you're saying. We got a lot of underdogs on the night so far, and we're barely into this card. But at 205 pounds, we have Saburg Saranoff versus Nick Negumuru. I heard it earlier. Oh, and because I'm reading it, it's messing me up. I even practiced it. Negumuru, I believe it is.
Negumuru Reeves from Point Break.
Niku, he's the Romanian, I thought he was also known as like the Romanian Punisher at a point in time. I could be getting it mixed up, but I'm pretty sure he went as that moniker against Zaburg Savarov. Savarov being 8-2, losing his two fights in the UFC, his only two losses ever. He came out of that Eastern Europe Russian scene fighting out of Tech TK Bay Pro Pros, but once he got in the UFC, he lost to Jean Valente 2 years ago, and then Tyson Pedro a month ago. And if you listen to the podcast, you know how we feel about those particular two fighters. We feel like they have very unique flash in the pan ability, and the fact that Safarov didn't beat those guys doesn't look good at all. Against though Niku here, the 9-0 perfect 24-year-old, he has fought middling competition. They do have records like 11-4, 12-6, stuff like that. They have better records, but still, the tape that I ended up watching on this young man, him and his opponent go in there, put their heads down, and literally swing. Like, it's who's going to land first, and my chin's better than yours. The technique, very, very out the door, and it's just, I'm going to get you out before you get me out of here. He has a ton of finishes, but it's both of them just swinging for the fences, and with Safarov's chin and suspect, it says that he's 32 years old, but we know with these Russians, he's probably 42 years old. We know that birth certificate's been doctored, and Safarov showed that he can get hurt in that Vellante fight, which Vellante is not known as a power puncher, was known as a power puncher because of this guy, but Safarov had just had a long history. I believe he was also like an M1 K1 fighter, so pro kickboxer. But what I think, this is the exact same thing that happened with Nico Price and Dirty Bird Means, where Niku is going to put his head down and swing that overhand right and left, right behind it as hard as he can. Safarov, even if he blocks it, just doesn't have the headspace to be able to take these hard and damaging punches. Think the young buck bowls him over, gets it done, and then is going to be a huge favorite moving forward from here. But it's more of a fade on Safarov than anything. I don't think that Niku is necessarily that good. I just don't think Safarov deserves to be in the UFC. I'm going to be heavy on Niku because I do think that this is a TKO round number one, but there's a fade on Safarov. I still didn't like what I saw from the young guy. It's just specifically a matchup that I think is exploitable here. Give me the huge favorite. Who do you have in this fight and why?
Give me the huge favorite as well, just because I don't like Safarov at all. That's all I know about this fight. And you know, my rule that I love, stick with what I know. I don't know or like anything that I'm seeing yet. So not that Nigarumu Renu Reeves won't come in and do a really awesome job and become a hype train overnight because of this fight, but I won't put it anywhere. I don't even know if I see if he gets exploited the first round, then what?
If this goes past the first, there is a likelihood that Safarov could take it over with his veteranship.
Do you think he could lose some in speed? He was fighting at heavyweight, and now he's coming down to 205. Do you think he's going to lose something in speed here?
Safarov?
No, Nick.
I don't think so, because he was pretty quick. He was quick because it's fast what he does. It's very athletic. He's very explosive, but it's not very technically sound. But I feel like that's a common thing we're seeing throughout the night, is kind of just these guys that move forward with tons of power, and that's Niku 100%.
And the reach doesn't even bother you at all?
No, because I think he gets past, he eats one or two shots to land his one, because Safarov just can't take it. I feel like everybody kind of sees that happening. It's not that he's a better
favorite
fighter
as well, but I have submission finish round one, and I'm going to stay away.
9,000 for the debut.
I might have it on things.
7,200 for Safarov. I'm going to have Niku on some, but this is like that Hughes, where Hughes was 9-4 debuting against Green also, as I'm saying last week. It's too steep. I'm going to say 40 to 50% of my cards. Safarov, I'm not going to expose myself to at all in this fight.
Yeah, you know, I'm just going to stick with my rule here. I'm going to stay away from it. I don't know anything about this person.
Good call. On to 155 pounds, we have Mark Dykesi, the Bone Crusher himself, against Irish Joe Duffy. Joe Duffy, at 31 years old, has had a long career. Of course, his most notable win of all time is over the Conor McGregor by heel hook years and years before at Cage Warriors. He came in to the UFC, winning a few fights over Ian George, losing to Dustin Poirier, rattling off a couple wins in there, but last losing over a year, 4 months ago, to James Vick via TKO. Vick's boxing really got to him in that and put him out clean. We were both on Vick in this one, even though Duffy was the favorite, and Duffy's been saying some really interesting things as of late in this training camp. The 16-3 fighter is saying that he's now starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I feel like here at Lat B, one of those rules, once you start talking about retirement, we immediately got to put up those flag signs. He's not saying retirement, but he's saying the light at the end of the tunnel. So he's saying, like, I'm starting to essentially think about retirement. So I think if he doesn't make a run, if this isn't his last run, if Joe Duffy gets a loss in here at any point in time, he's just going to deuces, get out of here. So it's just something we got to really be paying attention to. And Mark Dykesi, being 12-3, only losing in the UFC, was a huge prospect, winning his first two fights against Frankie Perez and Timu Paklin in a devastating knockout. He's coming off of a 3-fight losing streak to Dakar Close, Daniel Hooker via submission, and Nasrat Haqparast in there via decision 7 months ago. But Dykesi, I feel like, is black explosive. You know how we like to throw that term around here. And that is Dykesi going into that second round, midway through that second round. He really, really slows down. Those leg kicks, that fast in and out, jumping in style, fast jabs, really takes a step back. His fight IQ slows down a lot, and he can put together 3 and 4 punch combinations, but they are much more telegraphed. They do have power, and on the regional scene, all that high Taekwondo stuff was working. But now that he's in the UFC, people adapt, people overcome, and Dicassi has also got his back up against the wall. For him, this is pink slip. I don't see, especially at 155 with the killers you have in there, that on a 3-5 losing streak, he even got a fourth one in there, especially with one of those being a submission loss. So Dicassi is fun to watch because he is a high-paced striker, but once that leg starts to get picked apart, he really, I think that's a really clear shot. Once he gets in these grappling advantage or exchanges, he really starts to slow down a lot. The muscle starts to weigh on him and people really start being like, oh, okay, I don't have to keep striking with this guy. And Joe Duffy has that. He has good double leg takedowns, serviceable boxing. His leg kicks he can use more, doesn't as much, but he really, when he gets to the ground, where he does his best work, and really when he's gotten in most trouble has been when he stayed on the feet. So Joe Duffy needs to get this to the ground immediately. Interesting thing, though, that I did hear about Duffy is he's actually been training with Hap Karas, who's got the last win over Dicassi. So if there's someone who's seen a full 3 minutes in there or a full three rounds, it is Hap Karas. So Duffy's like, I got a lot of good stuff that I feel like I can take away from here. Again, hopefully he doesn't take that and think he can beat Bone Crusher standing, because Duffy could get knocked down in there. I got Duffy decision. I don't see this being as big of a favorite, even though I have Duffy winning. I could see him getting a submission here, but I think that Kessie can also land that overhand right at any given time. I think it should be like a minus 145 Duffy, plus 115 Dicassie. So for that reason, I'm not going to play this heavy anywhere. Give me Duffy decision. This is a stay away for me, honestly. Who do you have in this fight and why?
What? How long has Dicassie been at American Top Team?
I want to say five fights now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not new. It's not new. When he first got in the UFC, I feel like after his first fight, he flew right over, right for that team.
Every time I pick, I've only picked the Bone Crusher twice, he's lost. I'm never going to pick him again. That's why I'm going with Joe Duffy. I hope he doesn't try to stay on the feet, but I don't know why he would. When a guy throws too strong, he usually goes for the submission, and I think he can get the takedown on Dicassi, and I think he can get the submission on him if Dan Hooker can. That's my MMA math of the day. I'm going to go with Duffy. Do I want decision? I almost think it might have to be a submission for him to win.
Interesting.
Like, it could be the Damian Maya look, where it's just, like, constant going for the takedown, you know,
submission
attempt, so.
Very, very interesting. The 26-year-old Dicassi can make those bigger jumps.
And you're right. I don't think he's going to want to stand and throw with Dicassi.
We've seen crazier things happen. Yeah. We've seen crazy. That's why we love this sport. At 9,100 for the
I feel humongous... like I've always been a Bone Crusher hater, too, and it usually works. So, Duffy decision.
So, for the huge minus 225 favorite, Joseph Duffy, 9,100 on DraftKings against Dicassi, 7,100 plus 175 underdog. Are you going to play Duffy in a lot of spots here? I don't think I am.
No.
I agree with that. He really has to get a finish in order to pay that out. So, maybe there's even a couple... random spots, 20, 10%. I put Dicassi just because if he gets a round one KO, which can happen. I've seen crazier things. So I think that line is a little inflated in the night.
You know what we're noticing on this card? A huge resurrection. I like to call it the Bisping era kids. They're all kids growing up watching Michael Bisping inside the octagon, and now look at how young this card is.
Oh, for sure.
There's a lot of monsters beasts on here we're going to be watching for the next 10 years. It's pretty awesome.
One of those young monsters that we've been profiling for a while at 145 pounds is AAA himself. Arnold Almighty Allen against Jordan Rinaldi, All Day Rinaldi, has come in with a 14-6 record. Rinaldi, he's been checkered in the UFC, losing his debut against Trujillo. Or actually, did he win his debut? Let's see, where was his debut? It was against Trujillo. He ended up losing that one via decision, but he ended up coming rattling back, beating Alvaro Herrera, the Diaz disciple, lost Gregor Gillespie, and then as of late beat Jason Knight in a underdog. 4 months ago, Jason Knight no longer in the UFC, now fighting for bare knuckle fighting, just throwing that out there. Against, is it Artem Lobov or is it Paulo Malignaggi who Jason Knight's going to fight? I think it's one of those guys that he has.
No, isn't Pauly fighting Lobov?
Oh, is that what it is? How do you feel about that real quick?
I think it's, I mean, I'm glad for Lobov that he's getting some money. Cool. Six figures. If Pauly, you know, I think it's easy money.
Right? The easiest money in the world.
It's super easy money, but if he went out and lost to Artem, would that ruin, because bare knuckle is a little different. You could break your hands a lot easier in there, and Artem seems like the kind of guy that would fight through it regardless, where who knows
about. I feel like Paulie's probably broken his hands even in gloves, though. Look at Mayweather's hands. He's got little grandma hands.
I know, but not everybody has little baby hands.
True, very true.
Like little, I don't
know. You could have hands of stone.
Yeah, I don't know if, but it just seems like, because he's a professional announcer, too.
True, very, very true.
It just seems like a very thirsty move, unless they're both making comfortable six figures, in my opinion. For Lobov, less thirsty than Pauly, but maybe he needs the money, too. So, you know, who am I to judge, but...
We're in a new age of combat sports.
I'll watch it. It's so silly.
I'll watch the replays on Twitter. I probably ain't going to be on that live.
Oh, yeah. I'm not tuning in. but I'll, like, if you're like, oh, that fight's up on YouTube, I'll be like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. I'm more along those lines as well. So, Rinaldi.
Or I might say, who won? And that might be it.
Definitely.
Like, if Pauly wins, I probably won't look too much. It'll just be the memes or GIFs or whatever. But if... Lobov wins, I'll watch the whole fight.
Interesting psychology going into deep, going in deep.
I gotta watch the goat do what he do.
I was waiting. I was hoping that was gonna eke its way in there. So Rinaldi at 145 pounds.
Have you seen DC calling himself the goat?
No, I have not.
What do you think of that?
I think there's gotta be an asterisk there when you got knocked out, even if it was on steroids.
Or is that definitely, are we about to see John Jones DC3?
We'll probably see John Jones DC3 in our lifetime again.
I don't know if it's next, though. There's so much money behind that. It better not be next. I think John Jones is just going to eat through a couple of people but real fast.
I see John Jones using DC to go to heavyweight.
Yeah, he wants the Brock fight. Yeah, and exactly. He's going to do enough and prove in pay-per-view numbers.
And he's a champ.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 champ. And then you get a fake-ass freaking tinfoil belt.
And then what's
with
he gonna
do? With a ruby on it. But wait, does he get two when he's in two-weight class? Or do they just give him a blue ruby?
You better give me two belts and two
I don't class. Know. I'm just saying. I don't know.
I think it's so cool if you have one of the old belts and one of the new belts. Because then it gives you that boxing look. You know how they have all different looking? That's what I like. I like the different belts. I've always been a proponent of different belts. I think they should change them like every year.
That's where I feel like even though like Branch and Ben Askren and all these guys who have been champs in other organizations, they come with their belts and walk into the UFC like, look at all the belts I walked in with. It only makes the UFC belt that much more admirable. Like,
ooh, we very, want that one
very
still.
Few people
with
have
all
that
these
one.
Belts, I still want that one.
Exactly.
And I think there's something cool about... If they had a different belt, like, every year or every few years that there was a new belt, it would give the illusion of, like, this guy's been a champion through three belts. Like, you know, if you were a Max Holloway or even a Cejudo.
You would know the era through the belt.
Yeah, and that would be really cool.
That'd be dope.
Yeah, anyway, that's
tough. So, back to Rinaldi, back to the 14-6 fighter, the win he just came off of Knight, really used his wrestling and striking with a good gas tank to pick apart Knight, use those takedowns to exploit the takedown defense for Jason Knight against Allen here. Allen, really a TriStar guy, been there for a while. He is fighting out of the UK, but has been over at TriStar for, I feel like, three or four fights, winning as of late over Mads Burrell, who just got a nasty submission the other night. Beat Makhchan Amerikani a year ago. Prior to that, he beat Yatsen Mays and also Omir. He's fought four times in the UFC, Allen has, and won all four of them. Won via submission. Good striking on the young guy. He does tend to gas out a little bit. He's put himself in some precarious situations on the ground, but he's been able to think his way out of these submission attempts and survive through it, has good fight IQ. I believe his dad is still one of his number one training coaches, but I don't feel like I hear all the bad stuff. It's more of like a Josh Thompson dad where TriStar's okay, or Steven, correct. He doesn't overcoach like a lot of other guys.
He's in not like stores. Sage Northcutt.
There we go. That's who I was thinking of. But I mean, this fight, really, really close fight. I know that Allen is a big favorite, but I don't necessarily see that. I think that Rinaldi throws with a little more power, and that can hurt Allen. And on the ground, Rinaldi is serviceable. The better submission ace is going to be Allen, the guy who has better triangles or more of those sneaky Kimuras, sneaky butterfly, tri-star guard is definitely Allen. But I think Rinaldi's really heavy on top as well and really stifles you. It's more that position over submission. So if there's a submission here, it's probably for Allen. Takedown defense, that's where it's iffy. I think both of these guys shoot good takedowns. I like Rinaldi's a bit better. The takedown defense for both of these guys is iffy, so it's all up to the scrambles on the ground and who has a better gas tank. I think it's really even. I actually see this being a coin flip of a fight. I do have the favorite Allen. I just don't see that minus 185 is on. I think that's way, way too high for this close of a fight. I think it should be minus 115, minus 115. I think it's a dirty-ass split, 29-28, and I'm going to give it to also the United Kingdom fighter. Even though he's at a TriStar, he's going to walk out with one of those United flags. He's going to have the local... there are going to be people that know his local town in there. So I think the punches, even if they have less power, the crowd gets into it for Arnold. But again, the line is off. If you're trying to parlay Arnold and don't think you're going to sweat your ass off in this fight, I don't see a finish either way. Again, I got a decision. Give me the Arnold. Who do you have in this fight and why?
I have Arnold, and I think he's kind of going to run away with it only because the Jason Knight win is not that exciting to me. Jason Knight was a guy that I saw leaving before anyone else. He has great submissions. He has shitty takedowns. He is very he comes in so shitty that he relies on his chin too much, and then when he gets hit, he got mad. Every single time he got hit, he got mad. And so Jason Knight's fighting style just wear thin. Like, people liked him for a while, but he just never progressed. Hey,
Diaz was his...
Yeah, he just never progressed past that point. So Rinaldi was kind of with a fading guy on one end. Losing to Gregor Gillespie, however, no one can fault him for that. Gregor's on a mad tear, and he's probably going to be wearing a belt. And he's my pick to be wearing the belt in the division.
Oh, really?
I think he beats Jose Aldo and T-City. I think his wrestling handles T-City.
Am I going too deep when I'm saying I like, who was that, Nardiev? Is that because that was just his debut fight? Am I going too deep? Where we can see Gillespie, he's got a straight line to that belt. Like, you can see how he gets to that belt.
Yeah, like, Nardiev is far, far off.
That's a year or 2 years off.
I feel like, in my opinion, I felt like I saw Shevchenko on two losses like that. That's how I saw her on her loss with Amanda Nunes, like, far off, like Nardiev. That's how far off that you're seeing him. He, if he has the right path and the right skill set, goes to the right camp at the right time and jumps forward. I kind of like Arnold for that. I think he's just progressing. He's a young guy. And I don't think it's a walkthrough fight by any means. The Gregor Gillespie fight was also hard. I just think Gregor Gillespie, his style... I kind of see Arnold Allen having the, like, lesser version of that style. And that's why I think it could be harmful for Rinaldi. And he's just a guy that's getting to the twilight of his career.
So, though, with that, the fact that Rinaldi's already fought a better version of that, do you think he actually stands a better shot against Arnold? Because he's like, oh, okay, this isn't Gillespie level of wrestling. Like, I can fight this off. You know how you get a little better when you lose?
Maybe, but in a weird way, only going to decision with Jason Knight, that isn't great to me.
Agreed. That's a good point.
That's not great to me. He's a guy that I would put on fading. I think Arnold Allen's going to come a lot harder. He's better stand-up than Jason Knight and better submissions. Like, his submissions are stronger. So I think he's more dangerous everywhere. It could give him a false idea of what he's coming up against. And this kid is... It's just his ring IQ coming together in there, and I think we're witnessing that.
He is smart, smart fighter.
But I do agree with you. I also got a decision.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. For as big of a favorite, 2-1 pretty much means that he's likely to finish in there. And at 8,700 on DraftKings for Allen against Rinaldi, 7,500, are you going to play this fight a lot? Because I don't see myself playing this fight a lot.
I might speckle, a little speck.
Who would you speckle there?
Arnold Allen. Even though I see it going for to decision, agreed. I just see him laying a lot of points. What are their points average? I don't know.
69 points for Allen against 51 for Rinaldi.
No, neither of them are worth
that's
it.
That's really. What I don't think they're worth it as well. So I'm going to actually recommend on DraftKings, probably stay away. But as you're saying, though, if there's likely a finish, it's probably Allen. So that for that logic in itself, 10, 20% of my card. But again, I think the decision is the real line there. On to 185 pounds, we
and
have...
a lot of this in the, is the respect for TriStar. It really, a lot of the decision I'm making tonight, is it all TriStar, no TriStar?
How many other TriStar? I do think I did mention one other guy already.
Joe Duffy is at TriStar.
Yeah.
And...
somebody
let's see
else.
If anyone else, if there's any more.
But TriStar's that type of camp that has all sorts of guys in and out of there, in and out of there. So I'm sure other guys have went in and out. If you aren't following The Bean at Zoll tonight, you know you're going to eventually get some V-picks out before the end of the weekend, especially after weigh-ins. Remember to follow Lesbo at WeakneckBaby. You can always get at us at Lesbo and The Bean. That profile fight with Allen Rinaldi is a reason to watch on ESPN Plus. Then we roll over into the main event at 185 pounds. Man, have we been making money. We already got how many underdogs split up amongst us on the undercard?
I know, I think we're all over the place.
We're everywhere. And
I don't know how I feel either. I'm having a kind of... I feel a little better than last week. Last week I wasn't high on the fights card.
Right.
And it showed in my picks. I'm hoping I can pull out something better this week, but I was riding high for a little bit. Got a little cocky. And then last week humbled me. Had a little humble pie.
I will say I had a rough weekend, so I wasn't able to bask in it too much. But I did do 10 of 13, which was up and above the
150. Oh, you did that last week?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was pretty darn good.
See. That's really good. You had a great week last week.
It could have been 11 to 13 real quick, but either way, I was in the top 150 in the world on tap. So,
nice.
Made some money. Made some money for sure. Had a lot of underdogs, and I feel fairly confident on this card as well. I feel like I'm picking a lot of underdogs, but again, we see things here. We see patterns. If you've been following along, you trust the process. You trust what you're getting, and at 185 pounds, you're getting one of the worst fighters of all time in the UFC with John Phillips against Jack Marshman. I'm not the only announcer who said that before. John Phillips is as bad as Priscilla Cachuera. I mean, this is just, doesn't move his head on the line, throws, has okay power, but again, moves forward and is likely to headbutt you, puts his head down, is... will get uppercut all day, has sloppy shots and takedowns, really flops around, especially when he can't get the takedown, and he gasses into that first minute of the second round. I mean, John Phillips just has had nothing that we've seen in there. The 21-8 fighter has lost his debut in the UFC to Charles Byrd, who really hasn't looked good as of late. He came in as a knockout artist, submission guy, because he beat John Phillips, one of the worst fighters we've ever seen. Now that we're looking at it, Bird's been getting finished in there. Just saying. Now we have... and then he lost to Kevin Holland via submission 3 months ago. And it's... you can see with Phillips on the ground, he's a fish out of water. He doesn't know how to properly defend Kimuras. He just... you can see when the hooks get in, he just kind of sits in turtle position and waits for someone to move so that he can just try to explode out. Marshman, though, doesn't have to... is a kickboxer. He is 22-8, lost 3 times in the UFC to Thiago Santos, beat Ryan James, lost a shoe face in there, also as of late lost to Carl Robertson in the decision, where Marshman was a huge underdog there. Everyone thought Robertson was going to run right through him, where Marshman's a competitive guy. He has a great straight right down the middle, throws a good teep kick, really likes to keep it standing, uses his wrestling in reverse and uses more of that tie clinch to keep it standing, break off, and pick you apart from the outside. We don't have to worry about Marshman going to the ground. I feel like between both of these guys, there's only been about half a takedown. And it was potentially Phillips in a scramble once he got hurt. So this is going to stay standing. And standing, Jack Marshman is leaps and bounds better of a striker. On the clinch, from distance, inside, elbows, knees. Marshman has his choice. He has his pickings to do what he wants with him. So I see this being super lopsided. I actually think that the line's off. And I don't say this often, but I think it's undervalued. I think Marshman runs away with this. He could be 3 or 4 to 1. Marshman or Phillips, absolutely nowhere. He's not going to be able to take him down. Not going to be able to strike with him. I think it's a TKO round number 1 or 2. I did have 2 because I was giving the toughness to Phillips a little bit. But the more I really think about it, it's probably going to be in minute round 2 or 3. Marshman sets up really good traps. He really is a good striker. But Marshman has his holes on the ground and takedown defense. Phillips doesn't bring that. So give me Marshman everywhere. Who do you have in this fight?
Weren't you just talking about SBG?
Yes, I was.
There's a fighter at SBG. Sean Phillips. That's your boy right there. All right.
Well, how's SBG guys at State at SBG doing?
I am not really high on Jack Marshman at all. Me I think either. The Carl Roberson, I don't know how I feel about him as necessarily UFC quality. Losing to Shoeface by submission in Brazil is, you were just there like a rat in a boa cage. Like, no one was there for you. No one was there to watch you. Ryan Janes by decision. Going to decision with Ryan Janes isn't that great to me. He's a guy that I question on if he should be in the UFC. Being put there, he probably fought in Brazil against Thiago Santos when he got wheel kicked. That was kind of the exact same thing. So I feel like these are both fighters that are just kind of put in there always as set up fights. And it's funny that they're both from Wales. And that's really all the odds are basing on, is that everyone local knows these guys. They know how they fight. And that's, I gotta guess that the odds are probably dead on here with how they stand. I have Marshman decision. I just think it's gonna be a low point fight and to stay away from it.
I am gonna have to graciously disagree. We're both on the same side. But as I'm saying, I think that high likeliness that this ends up getting finished in the first or second. 8,800 for Marshman on DraftKings against 7,400 for Phillips. I'm going to probably have to back off. Like I was saying about Smoka, just saying that. I said it, backed off, saved my night that way. I'm going to have to do that with Marshman here. I'm going to probably put him on like 75% of my cards just because these aren't high. It's the Cachoeira McMahon or meatball fight where both of these guys against anybody else, I'm picking the other guys against them, but they're not fighting each other, so I got to pick one. So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I could change that fight too. I could be
for
back
all the
and
wrong
forth.
Reasons. Like if not because.
No, I almost think the odds are swaying me a little bit in that fight, and the local girl might be the heavy favorite for because she's the local girl. All of the odd sites are in the UK, and like a lot of them that I look at are out of the UK, like a lot of like the Bovadas and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. They're both from the same place. Yeah. I gotta think the odds gotta be
right.
Somebody there. You call someone you know in Wales and you're like, hey, what do you know about these guys?
That's where I'm even saying the odds are off. I think you can go more in. You can still bet on Marshman.
I never think that. Punching bag. I don't see him getting finished. Is he a guy that gets finished often?
I think we're gonna see it much more. Now that he's fighting actual competition, level competition, and Marshman's won a couple in there, but that's enough about that one. At 170 pounds, we have Danny Roberts coming in against Claudio Silva. Roberts coming in with a 16-3 record, being out of the United Kingdom, 31 years old. He is coming off of a 2-fight winning streak to Oliver Enkamp and David Zouad. Lost to Mike Perry back in the day, Nordine Taleb via TKO.
No knockouts, just FYI.
Oh, for Marshman?
For Phillips. Never been knocked out.
Oh, he's never been...
Only been submitted. And that is if, like, Marshman would submit him, but Marshman...
But Marshman doesn't go to the ground. Yeah. Interesting. So, maybe I need to be backing off.
Maybe there are some points there, though, for Marshman if he's just going to... John Phillips is just going to be a punching bag. Even if it goes to decision, usually 185ers don't tend to throw a ton, but if he just goes in there and boxes him like a punching bag for 15 minutes, maybe he lays out 90 points.
Totally, but it is 8,800. So, yeah, that's pretty steep. Thank you for that, because it is. It's a valid point. Definitely a valid point. But back to Roberts beating Bobby Nash. The 2 knockouts that he's had in there, the Taleb knockout is really the one that scares me. Mike Perry, that's what he does. And in that Perry fight, Danny Roberts was picking Perry apart. Perry was all sorts of hurt, slapping his face, saying, come on forward. And we saw it at the end of the first and second round. And right at the end of the third, Perry finally was able to get Roberts out of there. But Roberts would have won that fight. Well, maybe even Perry stole those rounds at the end of those. But technically, the better fighter there, Danny Roberts. And unfortunately, his chin has been really suspect in camp, no longer in the UFC, I believe. And the split decision against Zouad hurt him in that fight. Danny Roberts has just been in it for a long time at 31 years old. I believe he started in his early 20s, maybe 19 years old fighting. So I don't know if it's CT. I just know that he reacts really badly. He gets really wobbly in there and has to hold on. And there's a lot of refs that get really close into stopping his fights when I see him. But I watch every Roberts. When I went back into the tape, I'm like, damn, Danny Roberts looks so good. And in every fight, sure enough, tink, he gets hit with a right. And all of a sudden, he's fighting for 30 seconds for his life, waiting for that bell to ring. And it happened in multiple fights that he even won. So Roberts, super, super tentative. Gotta be scared in there about that. Claudio Silva, though, at 12-1, he has had nothing but wins, beating Edwards in there. He had a big break in there because he popped for steroids early on. 5 years ago against Brad Scott, he beat unanimous decision. Then he had to take a little break because USADA ended up catching him. 4 years ago, he beat Leon Edwards decision. And then 9 months ago, he beat Nordin Taleb in a decision, or in a submission, rear naked choke. But he hurt Taleb in there, landing that overhand right again and again. And Taleb's actually a good striker. And I was surprised that the 36-year-old was going to come in looking better. I actually picked Taleb in that fight because I'm like, this guy popped for steroids. He's been out for 4 years. There's no way he looks better. But Silva's jab was on point. His striking looked better than it ever before. It was almost like he was on steroids all over again. It was almost like he was fighting in London where he doesn't have to be tested. It's almost like he was fighting in Brazil. So I don't know with Silva, but he's one of these guys that's managed to look better the older he's gotten, and he's shown a ton of power in his strikes on the ground. All sorts of nasty grappler Da Silva in there, and he can let loose at times in there, I feel like, with his striking, and is really confident, and showed he was really confident in his last fight against Taleb, because we know Taleb on the ground wouldn't do shit with him. So liked everything I saw from Silva there. I'm just waiting to fade him, waiting to fight in the States, waiting to get USADA on him. But if I don't have USADA in my back pocket, I don't see how you don't pick Silva in this submission. But I think it's what happens with Danny Roberts, everything. I think Roberts actually probably gets the better of the first round. But once he starts to slow down, because he does, he's an athletic guy, but very muscle bound. Once he starts to slow down and Silva gets going, if he can just hurt him with a left or right anywhere and just have Roberts be that scrambly, because Roberts will just grab for a leg when he's hurt. And you don't want to do that against Silva. Silva will wrap you up in a heartbeat and put your chin in your butthole, and you will be, you're out of there. So give me Silva submission round number two. Who do you have in this fight?
I also have Silva submission round number two.
Woo!
I'm fading Danny Roberts a little here, and I should be fading Silva, but you know what goes on in Brazil. They just got something different. And Danny just, he never... I don't think he looks better every fight. There's something off with his fighting style where he just likes to stand and bang, and Silva has more skills than just standing and banging. And all the guys that Danny Roberts has been up against of recent are all guys that'll stand and bang like robots with him and just try to punch it out. Claudio Silva's not one of those guys. I've bet against Silva every single time, and that hasn't worked out great for me. I've learned from my mistakes. Silva submission round two.
For 8,600 on DraftKings for the favorite, -170 favorite, Silva against Danny Roberts, 7,600 +135. Are you going to put either one of these fighters anywhere? I feel like we both have Silva. And in that second round submission, he's going to probably be over that 90-point mark. I think he covers that 86,000, and we have enough underdogs throughout the night that I'm going to be able to speckle some of these higher priced guys. I think it is that Silva in there.
I like Silva all right. I think he's going to get his money.
On to 135 pounds, we have a profile fight with Nathaniel Wood versus Jose Alberto Quinones, El Teco himself. Teco coming off of that Latin America show, being 7-2, getting a 4-fight winning streak. beating the people like Morales in a submission, Gomez, as of late, Diego Rivas, and his last win was over Torrento Ishihara, decision over a year ago. Training out of Alliance, Tecco is one of these Mexican boxers who likes to keep it standing on the ground. He's scrappy and wiry, but technically, he can be exploited on the ground for sure. There's times with some of his get-ups that they're valiant and he doesn't stop moving, but technically he just doesn't clear it. But if you're at Alliance training with DC and Dominic Cruz... Or who's at Alliance? Oh, that's
Dominic,
AKA.
You said it right. Dominic Cruz, the other DC.
Yeah. I did say DC.
Yeah, yeah, you said there Dominic Cruz.
Dominic Cruz.
If you would have said DC, I would have been like, true.
Jeremy Stevens, you got a bunch of other wrestlers over at Alliance. You got to be getting better in there. And Tecco, everybody says good things. He shows up early, stays late, is a student of the game. But really, boxes, boxes, boxes. Actually has a pretty good strike output. I believe he's at around six strikes per minute. Nathaniel Wood, though, being 15-3 out of England, this is a guy that's going to have everybody in his corner. He's a superstar, being on some of the biggest... turning tide bouts of 2017 and 18. He has highlights from prior organizations and in the UFC has been looking all sorts of good, fighting out of Titan Fighter. He last beat Ewell in a submission 2 months ago. Prior to that, beating Johnny Eduardo 9 months ago in a rally comeback. But the Cage Warriors champion is definitely a Brad Pickett disciple. Has as much heart as the Mexican fighter. I mean, like if there's a way that I could describe Nathaniel Wood, I'd say he's a Mexican fighter. But he's fighting out of England. But that's a high praise if from the Bean himself. I'm just saying. That ain't easy. That ain't easy to be a guy who can pull deep. But what that means as well is that Nathaniel Woods gets hit to have to show that valiantness. He puts his chin in danger. And against power strikers, he's going to get hurt a lot more. Quiñones, unfortunately, isn't that power striker. He kills you by 1,000 cuts. He puts a pace on you. Doesn't allow that takedown to get in. He's a position over submission guy. He has got a couple submissions, but they aren't against the highest caliber fighter, where I don't think that's going to happen against Wood. But there is, in the third round, I think Tecco can potentially even take that third round. But I feel like Wood starts off a little bit faster, a little bit stronger. And if he doesn't have to worry about the power as much, he can really implement his game plan more. So I think this actually goes 29-28 decision. The local boy's going to have everybody yelling for every single strike. I think the Mexican shows up, though, and doesn't get bowled over here. I got a decision 29-28. Give me the favorite here, Inwood. Who do you have in this fight and why?
It's funny that you said he's a Mexican fighter because I was going to call him Black Explosive. I was going to say he has that like tight muscular build that every minute that the fight goes on, he loses a little bit of his cardio. He's not one of those guys that comes on strong in the third. So I like that you said that Quiñones could definitely take the third round. If it goes that long, I think he could. The only thing with that at this level of Woods' game, like the kid is just coming along so fast. I think if he... to get the decision in the third, he'd have to somehow grind it. He couldn't just stay and pick him apart. I think Wood's going to be aggressive in there, and I think he's dangerous with the submission at every second of the entire fight. And because of that, his hands are crisp too. I think he's just such a well-rounded kid that's from all the places. I like that you said the crowd's going to be behind it too. So even if it goes to decisions, the judges are swayed. I just think Wood's going to eke it out with a dirty old submission to end the round three. And this is going to be such a huge hype. This kid's going to start getting the hype. But I think Quiñones is a guy that deservedly, it should be a deservant if he beats Quiñones, it's deservant hype. I don't think this is a walkthrough fight and it could be the fight of the night. I think it's going to be fun.
I like what you're saying, but the minus 275 favorite, 9,400 Inwood against Quiñones is 6,800. Is there a play there? I see a decision, so I don't like myself going on Wood there.
The only reason is the 135ers throw 1,000 punches.
True. That's and these the guys both have high output levels. I do feel like if you're following me at Zoltanite, I'll retweet a lot of these strike percentages from at Numbers MMA.
Could this be something really weird? Is this one of the ones that maybe you stack them together if one of them's cheap enough and they actually both get over 80 points and it's well worth it?
I don't see that this is a stack just because at 9,400, if there's a play here, it's probably Quiñones.
9,400 if he gets 120 because he's just laying out tons of punches and he's like schooling it. But it's a battle. It's a three-round battle. And Quiñones even lays out half of that and gets like 70. Quiñones is so cheap if you can get your loser for 70 and you still think Wood's going to win. I don't know. This might be the weird stack. The little guys are always the weird stack, in my opinion.
They have, these two do have the level of output that is able to generate high points for either fighter as well here. I think that potentially the play here for me, I'm going to put both of these guys because if there's someone to finish, it is Wood at that 94, so he would be able to cover it a bit more. But if it goes to decision at all for 6-8, you could put every other favorite on there with just Quiñones and it'll end up, you'll cash, probably won't take home that first place prize, but you'll end up tripling up.
Do you think for 2019 we might have a new thing called the Lat B Stacked?
Stacked B.
Yeah, like that's a, just Lat B are stacked. It's not, stack, it's so rare, it's not going to be every time, but it's just.
What else do you stack? Whoppers?
BLTs.
Oh, Jenga.
That's what I want for dinner tonight. BLT. Get my house smelling like pig.
Get that bacon going.
I know. My vegan wife is like, what? You don't even eat pork. But bacon. Come on. You can't have a BLT without bacon.
Everybody loves bacon. Anything left with the 35ers?
That's it.
On to 205 pounds, another premier fight. This is a juicy one. This one's got me all sorts of licking my fingers because we got a fight between Volkan Ozdemir versus Dominic Reyes. And if there was ever hype, it was on Cousin, I mean, No Time. Shooting to the top, beating Shurkhanov, which we've been telling you guys, little chinny. Been telling you about Shurkhanov, also defeating who else in there? A couple other guys who were chinny in there. And then once he fought at level, well, not even at level, much, much higher competition in Daniel Cormier and Anthony Smith, kinda, where he got submitted 4 months ago. But we really saw that Ozdemir starts the gas in that second round heavy. He has a ton of power in that right hand, throws a good straight right down the middle. But really, after that second round, Ozdemir is lost. And on the ground, Anthony Smith just submitted you, and he looked good getting right around you. He did hurt you striking-wise, but it was also just that gas tank. It was Smith using that veteranship to go past that first-round barrage that Ozdemir likes to throw in. Dominic Reyes has had some of that trajectory, some of that hype. This is one of those guys that a lot of people have been saying, I have been saying on our year-end show, a guy you could be getting on, Reyes at 205. That's someone that you got to be watching out for because highlight finishes on the ground, striking, standing. I mean, look up his highlights. You're going to see flying knees, all sorts of flashy stuff with a good gas tank.
He was your hype train to get on.
Definitely.
He bought the ticket.
And it's the truth, the 10-0 fighter is getting the right matchups to eventually get to John Jones. And this is one of those. This is a former contender. Now that Anthony Smith just lost to John Jones, and this guy has lost to him, now this is where Reyes is like, okay, now I get Smith, or I'm the next contender. I do feel like this is in that top route. Do we have rankings for either of these guys?
Number 8 light heavyweight in the world for Dominic Reyes and number 7 light heavyweight in the world for Volkan Ozdemir.
So all trajectory is going well for Reyes, but he's a big favorite here for a reason. It's just because everyone's seeing those holes. Volkan can put guys that got weak chins in there out, hurt them, but guys that can stick to any type of a game plan and take you into that deeper water, which Reyes has done. Even though he's finished a lot of guys, they're not all first rounders. He has a few fights in the UFC now, beating Vincent St. Preux in a decision, Jared Cannonier via TKO, and Kimball, who's no longer in the UFC. Reyes is just someone who we see also growing in every single one of his fights. The 29-year-old fighter is just starting to come into his prime, so the way I see this fight eventually ending up is Reyes has the better gas tank. I think there is a finish. I think Reyes has it. And I think it's in that second, if not third round, because we've seen enough of Cousin in there. I mean, no time that he can, that he will gas. It's guaranteed. He gasses in that second round, especially late. And Reyes throws that switched left kick, that right kick out of nowhere. He does it really well. Keeps his hands low, but he also has really deep darces on the ground. And if Ozdemir wants to take it to the ground at all, probably reactionary because he starts getting lit up with that jab, that Reyes actually wraps him up on the ground. So I could see Reyes taking this in multiple spots. I see why he's a big favorite here. Give me Reyes everywhere. Who do you have in this fight and why?
Volkan Ozdemir has a lot of heart, and he is going to be very hard to finish, and he's not going to be finished by punches. His nose can be over in his ear, and he'll be smelling what he's hearing, and he's still not going to be taken out of there by he's just, and I also I think he's a guy with a good chin, maybe to his own detriment. He can be finished by submission, however, and I think Dominic Reyes just has better skill set everywhere, and he's a guy that it's just coming together better and better for everywhere. He does have the better cardio. He does have the better hands. He does have the better submissions. I just think Volkan isn't going to be finished enough that Reyes is going to have to submit him, but I think he gets him down over and over again. I think it's well worth the points. I've never gone against Dominic Reyes, so I'm not going to start today. I was high on Ozdemir for a period of time. That faded. I'm sorry if I steered you wrong. It won't happen anymore, but he's a guy that I think Volkan Ozdemir, after this, in my opinion, should move on up. Go to 265 and let those hands go. You can knock some big boys out and we can put on some fun fights. Let's move on up. So, yeah, Dominic Reyes is the most dangerous guy by far in the division for Johnny Bones Jones. So he will get it done with Volkan, and I think you can comfortably put him everywhere.
What round do you think gets over in there?
I have submission round 3. I just because more of Ozdemir's heart, but I like your late second, early third call.
Definitely. For DraftKings, you're going to end up paying for the heavy favorite, -265. Dominic Reyes, $9,300 on DraftKings against $6,900 for Ozdemir, +205. I just see myself... I've been playing a lot of underdogs to pay up for people. This is the type of guy I want to pay up for.
Agreed. Agreed.
On to the co-main event. We have about at 170 pounds, Leon Edwards versus Gunny Nelson. The SBG former disciple has spread his wings and fly away. What is that? I don't know where I was going with that, but I feel like Gunny Nelson. Oh,
that little dance that he was doing. Did you see that?
Follow me. What was that? Follow me.
No, or he was like dancing. Like,
yeah, it's the Call on Me song. And he's there wearing a Canadian singlet and a blue Canadian singlet dancing around in spandex.
Maybe it's an Icelandic singlet.
It had the Canadian maple ball, leaf in the corner. Yeah, I've done my research. I watched my fight tape. Gunny looking thin in there. He's looking buff in there. But really...
And you said he's not at Straight Blast anymore.
He's not at Straight Blast. I believe he's at TriStar. I'm almost positive he's been at TriStar for 2 fights now. And the 17-3 fighter and 1 fighter is... lost to Ponzinibbio, which here the Bean had all sorts of money on, telling you specifically, and it's because Gunny Nelson, great karate fighter, is really good at coming in and out, but is very gas tank dependent, and on the ground he is a monster. Gunny Nelson's best on the ground. Ask who is it? Alex Oliveira, who got a vagina inserted in his face last fight because that thing was 29 stitches. And whew, Oliveira tapped because of the blood. He said it himself.
Some gash.
Yeah, he got a bloody gash. Bloody gash all over in there. And Gunny Nelson, if he goes to his wrestling and to his ground game, he is a monster for anybody in there. And against Leon Edwards... it's definitely an avenue that he can get there and get it done. The 16-3 Edwards is coming off of a huge winning streak. I believe it's on a five or six, maybe seven fight winning streak, last beating Donald Cerrone in the decision, beating all sorts of people like Brian Barberina, Sabata, who else in there does he have? Tumanov, and Vicente Luque in a decision. Edwards gets decisions in there. I always get Edwards and Danny Roberts mixed up because I feel like they fight on every single fight card. So I always like to be like, oh, Edwards is the same as Roberts, and they both, and they really aren't. If one of the fighters has grown more, Leon Edwards has. He has had close decisions, but he's had them because he has high fight IQ in there. His gas tank is good. It's gotten better, but he is one of these guys that knows when to get a takedown late in a round, knows where to keep a fight, and uses his advantages where he needs them. His striking is serviceable, good Muay Thai, good leg kicks on Edwards, and I feel like that's where it plays in well. If Gunny, who sits really karate, very Horiguchi-esque in there, watch Horiguchi and watch Gunnar Nelson. Gunnar Nelson is a poor man Horiguchi. He's a much heavier, much slower, and much less of a gas tank. And I think that that's the exact key in this fight, stylistically, where Gunny really tends to fade. We can really see that he gives up a lot of submissions and a lot of strike potential later as the fight goes on. And it's because that bouncing style, when you don't have the cardio for it, all of a sudden his feet plant on the ground. And those leg kicks, if Edwards gets them going early, it really slows down Gunny. And then if he can't get it to the ground, Gunny doesn't have a shot here because Edwards is a much better striker than him. It's whether Edwards can use his wrestling in reverse to be able to land that kick and defy and stop the takedown. Gunnar Nelson throws a heavy right hand right into double underhooks, gets you to the cage and drags you down with outside trips. And Edwards fights all this really, really well. I've seen a lot of guys trying to do this. The Russian Tumanov, Sabata, Cerrone, all these guys are trying that. And Edwards does good enough to be able to stifle it, usually turn the back to the cage, and be able to back up, get back to the center, and hit you apart with that jab. So this is a super close fight. I see why it's a freaking co-main event. I am siding with Edwards because I think like it's all that wrestling. It's Gunny needs this to get to the ground to win, and I think Edwards could keep it where he wants it, and that's striking. I'm surprised that Edwards has actually switched over to this big of a favorite, but minus 180, give me chalk on the dog. I got decision Edwards. I don't know if I necessarily see a finish here. Who do you have in this fight and why?
Beating Brian Barberina by a decision and Vincent Luque by a decision, to me, I gotta think you can beat Gunnar Nelson by a decision. I don't think he's gonna go in there and knock him out or do anything that he did against Sabata, but his ring IQ is good. He took a good amount of time off. I like that. Gunnar Nelson did come in looking all bodied up in his last fight. And if we've learned anything, too much body eats your cardio even more. So if you were already a guy that deals with bad cardio, are you gonna continue? Did that help by gaining that much more muscle? So is this a all straight blast gym, no straight blast gym? So I'm gonna go with the no straight blast gym there, and I'm gonna pick Edwards' decision on this as well. And I'm kind of surprised he's not an underdog as well. I thought he was gonna be.
I really thought he was gonna be an underdog. I don't know if that switched completely, flipped over.
I was kind of an Edwards hater, too. I don't know if it had anything to do with Danny Roberts, but I feel like I used to be high on Danny Roberts, but maybe not. And
they'd come along at, like, the same time.
I used to hate on Edwards. For me, it might be the Dykesi. That could be mine. He could have been on a card, so I was hating on Leon Edwards, and now he separated himself from the pack. And it's not because they were all just black guys. That just seemed horrible. He separated himself from the pack of black guys. The Cerrone fight I just thought was next level, and he really beat two of my favorite underdog. Like, Luque way back when was an underdog, now everyone, but Barberina beating him, he has that wrestling that to stay off the ground with Barberina is good deal with me. I like Edwards here.
Definitely agree, but I'm surprised, I guess everyone else sees it, because Edwards is the favorite at minus 180 again, and on DraftKings, 8,300 against Gunnar Nelson's 7,900, the plus 145 underdog. Though Gunnar Nelson, he could pull off a crazy ass submission. I don't know if I'm going to play either fighter because I see a decision here. So I think that this could stay pretty low scoring. I don't know if either one clears over that 70 mark. Average 69 or 68 points for Edwards against 76 for Gunnar Nelson. Do you feel like you play this fight a lot on your DraftKings?
Oh, I'm nervous a little, but I think I will. I'll put Edwards on some cards.
Would you give it how much of a percentage? Because I'm thinking like 40%.
I agree. I don't want to go heavy in the paint here.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And maybe even a 10% shot on Gunnar Nelson just for that flash submission ability, because Oliveira got... Ask Oliveira. I bet you he's voting for Gunnar Nelson.
True. Maybe not. Maybe he's like... It seems like Brazilian guys, he probably respects the shit out of him. He's probably all like...
Fuck that guy. Go high. I hope he gets his chin in his butthole.
Yeah. He's like...
I don't know where I got that from, by the way. I've never heard that, so...
That's your new.
Yeah. It's gonna be. It has to be now. So... The main event, we go 170 pounds. There's been some shit talking going on.
Your butthole.
Sounds like a move.
It sounds like something Darren Till would say. Yeah. You gotta have your chin in your butthole, mate.
I'm gonna put the chin in your butthole, mate.
Hey, Daisy. You gotta have your chin in your butthole. He has like weird words that he calls out.
The local.
Muffin.
What song? So the main event is at 170 pounds with Darren Till versus Jorge Masvidal. If you've been listening to the show since back in the... What's that service? What was that original service?
What one?
A B name. The podcast service we were using since we got on the big time.
And the YouTubes. Oh my gosh. Even if I remembered, I don't even know if I'd say it.
Exactly. So.
Bumpers.
There it is. If you've been back on it, Jorge Masvidal was our original Usman. He's the reason we switched to Kamaru Usman once we were like, we gotta switch the juice. Gotta switch the juice. Masvidal just kind of... We love him. He's a great fighter. He's been fighting on the streets since Kimbo Slice days in Miami.
We didn't do that on this show?
We talked a little bit about it last show. We said it a little bit last show as well.
No, but even way back, we didn't do it on since we've been doing this one? This stream?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't know either.
I don't think so. It's been a bit. We've been at it. Been hitting it up. Growing. Thank you, fans, for watching us grow. There's reasons for it. And we're going to keep going. There's... Fun changes on the way. So remember to like and subscribe. Darren Till, we called that Cerrone Darren Till fight to the T, the underdog. We called that Tyron Woodley Darren Till fight to the T. We told you all the underdogs. We told you where to make money. We've been on these guys for a while. And Masvidal, 32-13, he is game bred, willing to fight anyone, especially Bisping in there. Biggest beef in the game with Bisping. He's coming off of a show on the Latin America Survivor where he almost won it but got eventually voted off. He's coming off of a loss a year, 4 months ago. And prior to that, lost to Damian Maia in a split decision. But Jorge Masvidal, I mean, jack of all trades, master of none. Some of the best recovery time in the game. You cannot tell me anybody gets up better than a knockdown than Jorge Masvidal. And he's clear-headed. And we've seen it time and time again. So he's been in it forever. And at 34 years old, I don't want to say he's peaking, but we know what we're getting with Jorge Masvidal. And a lot of trouble that I've always had with Masvidal is that he fights to the level of his competitor and he falls into the pace of his opponent. And that'll give up fights. And he'll do that. Bobby Green, you know I like to bring up Bobby Green style, where he'll shake it off and be like, nah man, that didn't hurt, which tells me and everyone else in there that hurt, or that got me a little bit more. And in a hometown of London, when you're gonna have Sweet Carolina playing on the walk-in, you're gonna need everything.
You think he's gonna do that again?
I don't know what if it's
not that's not a London song, is it? It's an American song, isn't it?
From what I've heard Darren Till, he says when he goes to the pub and that song comes on, everybody sings on, so it feels a bit at home.
But haven't you ever just been to any pub in America?
I agree. The same thing, and I've seen
any
it. Any
pub
it on,
across the country with a jukebox? Sweet Caroline's and, like, everyone's singing.
It's a bar song.
Yeah, it's just a bar song. There's nothing special about it. I mean, it's all right. It's 20. He's young.
What's the wager that he comes into something else?
I think he might pick something different because he only did the Sweet Caroline once.
Once. Just yeah. once. But regardless, but it's more...
I think it'll be another fun bar song. Like, maybe it'll be Piano Man or Tiny Dancer or...
I'd always love when someone comes in a zombie.
He can't come into a zombie. Only a zombie can come in. There's Korean enough zombie zombies. Did. Yeah, that's who did. Enough that's zombies who did. In the UFC.
For sure, that's true. True, true, true. But any of those good bar songs. But Darren Till, striker, likes to keep it standing on the ground. Doesn't have a ground game. T-Wood showed us that real quick. He wins his fight striking, went to a split decision with Dolby, only lost two T-Woods in there. That split decision was a draw. Beat Boyhan, who's no longer in the UFC, knocked out Cerrone, and then beat Stephen Thompson in a controversial split in UK as well. So just saying, the hometown helped that controversial split. That was a really close fight. Thompson, who usually doesn't talk about badly in those T-Wood split decision fights, he was like, man, it is what it is. Thompson in that Till fight is like, man, I won that fight. I won that fight even though whatever, and he doesn't usually say that. So it was controversial, and for that reason, it's really a scary fight to be betting on the underdog here because the crowd, the judges do get swayed. It is a five-rounder, but the output levels here, for me, are for Masvidal. The chin holds up for Masvidal. And Darren Till is a good striker with high-level stuff. He sets up traps and stuff. But the better all-around fighter, like a Tyrone Woodley, is Jorge Masvidal. Masvidal does occasionally shoot in there. And if Jorge Masvidal chooses to shoot at all, he wins this fight. Once he gets to the ground, Masvidal is much, much better. Masvidal can get around, get a rear naked choke. But if Masvidal, who has great fight IQ, but at times is questionable without going to that takedown when he should have and can on people. It's always hesitant to be betting on Masvidal because he can give up fights and he will in his own head talk about how he thought he was winning the fight. And it's like, you can't be in your head. You got to listen outside of it. But I have Till right here decision. But the more and more I talk about this, I feel like once we get into second to fourth round on the ground, Mystic Beans coming in, I got a vision. It's the Houdini. I think Masvidal gets a submission round number four.
Wow.
I had Till, but I don't like what I've been seeing from Till. I haven't seen as much in advance. I see a striker who likes to keep it striking and keep it close. And Masvidal does that. That's Masvidal's game plan.
I don't think Masvidal has T. Woods level takedown at all. I just don't give him enough. He doesn't have enough strength. He looks bodied up lately. He looks like he's in really good physical shape. And we know he's been training with Colby. So we know the ground game's got to be there for him. And they've got to be smart enough to see the exact game plan. Because that's what T. Woods does, is he shows you the blueprint of how to beat every fighter. And then everybody goes in after him and does that blueprint. That's exactly what T. Woods did. So if Jorge's smart, could he do that game plan? Yes. I don't think he has the T. Woods strength to get a guy like Darren Till down who doesn't have slack takedown defense. He actually has a really good sprawl, and when guys go in to, he usually can stay standing. And if you come in too fast on him, you could get caught. And Jorge sometimes does get caught. I think Till can take a lot of damage. I think his cardio is going to get better and better the more he trains, hopefully the older he gets. I do think it's something that you can work on over the long haul. We do know guys like Gamebred will keep coming at you, but this is crazy level power, and this is a big fight to take on next. He actually was just calling out anyone for a fight and stepped in on this at a weird time. I agree with you. Till did not beat Wonder Boy. So that loss is a weird one for the MMA math, but I still think that Till Wonder Boy was a lot closer than Wonder Boy versus Masvidal. Masvidal just looked like he got handled in there, and it was really, it's like I saw him aged for the first time. And the last few fights that I went with him, I had a really good record. I'm 7-5 with Masvidal, and I've never been wrong with Darren Till. So I'm going to go Darren Till decision here. I don't think Masvidal's a finish. I don't think he's a walkthrough. I actually think this is kind of a perfect, not too heavy wrestler for Darren Till to get some confidence back underneath him so you can build this star. This is the perfect card for the headline and the perfect place and a good name to take out and grow his repertoire, but I don't think Masvidal goes out like Cowboy. I don't think he gets finished.
I agree. And for that, maybe I'm going a little crazy and I'm getting a little too predictive with that submission. I might see myself switching to that split decision, but I do think it's close. So give me the shot on the dog with Masvidal split decision. But again, the crowd.
If it's close.
The
crowd. Yeah, if it's close, we saw Wonderboy lose there to him.
For this, exactly.
So I just feel like if it's a close fight, you got to go with uphill battle, decision.
Right?
And I love Masvidal, but this is not a great comeback fight for him. I don't know why he did this one. But he's he's name brand enough. He's worthy of a... No one else wanted to fight Darren Till as the main event. He's the biggest name probably that would step in.
I would agree this is probably the biggest one. At 9,200 on DraftKings, Darren Till against Masvidal, 7,000 even. Got to get a finish in there. The moderate plus, or the minus 245 favorite against the plus 190 underdog. I got tons of underdogs tonight. I'm scared about Masvidal. I'm scared.
I actually could see putting Masvidal speckled on a few cards for that inexpensive. A guy like Masvidal with that kind of experience, as good a chin and good a cardio for that kind of money? When are you ever going to get Jorge so cheap?
Definitely. And also with Masvidal going and doing this Survivor thing for a year in Latin America and coming in, as we're saying, semi-short notice and stuff, I am starting
guys
to be
like...
Guys
that do other things.
Right. Right, right, right. We always see this. We always say, hey, guys that are doing this usually don't look better. And they say when they lose, well, I extended myself a little thinly and this is what happened. So you got to wait for after weigh-ins. Wait for those final cards. That break. This is actually going to be midday card. Late
what?
Breaking. This what? Starts, I believe, 10, 11 a.m. East Coast time. So going to end by 7 p.m., I believe, Eastern Standard Time. Look at your local listings. Remember.
I might have a little golden tea in the day. I might have a little golden tea. Do we have a underdog pick?
Officially an underdog? We got a lot of underdog picks.
Do we want to make anywhere?
We got to make an inaugural official BJ pick of the week.
I know. We haven't even... I wanted to know if you wanted the fans to get involved with it because I didn't know what to call it. BJ pick of the week or bandits bonus or...
I'd like that. Let's put up a survey and we can put it. And if you didn't pick up on it last time, we're switching on our underdog to Bandit Jones, a beloved pet who ended up passing over the weekend. So he was the first underdog ever. We're going to end up switching that as our pick of the week. And maybe you guys can be a part of it. We'll put up a BJ Bandit bonus bandit and
maybe we'll put up a couple ones. Little stamps. We'll figure out something. If you're not on Twitter though, it doesn't really help. So
who's the official underdog we want to claim here?
I know. I'm looking through them and shout out some of them.
Do we both have Silva? Submission round number 2 I think was pretty spot on, and he's the favorite though. Damn it.
I know. I feel like I picked a lot of favorites tonight, which
is interesting.
Weird for me. Slight favorite.
Oh, Edwards is a favorite too. Oh, dang. Maybe we didn't pick that many underdogs.
Moderate favorite for Duffy.
Right?
Moderate favorite. Hinich.
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 It is Hinich.
The Hurricane.
That's it. That's the underdog. We'll figure it out with the fans.
Wow, that's a big underdog, too. We came out of the box.
Woo!
Because Tom Breeze, everybody has Tom Breeze everywhere. That could be a crazy underdog. Gosh, that's so much pressure to have, like... I don't want there to be a loser involved. The Leslie Smith had a good rap, so Hinich, better step it up. And thank you guys for listening. We love you.
Let's go to the beat!
Thanks for listening to Lat B. For all things Lesbo and the Bean, head over to lesboandthebean.com or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.